I'm sitting here with Professor Tommi Männystö. We are going to have a talk about a very important aspect of software engineering, and that is software architecture. Thank you very much, Tommi, for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. And if we start from the objective of this podcast, and we start from the view that software architectures is about the dealing the complexity of systems, all kinds of software systems that seem to be becoming more and more complex in many ways. And that's the basic motivation for software architecture we are going to use today. And then after that, we'll take a little bit of a look at what is software architecture, what is the role of a software architecture in software development, and then briefly about architecture design. And we are going to talk a little bit about a concept of architecturally significant decisions, which is one key concept in software architecture design. And then take a look at the role of the software architect.
Why should we care about software architecture?
One way is that what I already said about dealing with complexity. But then if you take a look at what companies are, for example, interested in, and one source you might Google into is cnnmoney.com, which actually lists those top rated best jobs in America. And I think software architecture has been there at quite a top in many ways. And that's one indication of that there is something in the job description that actually makes the companies interested, and there's something that they... Those are the people they actually want to have.
I understand that, and that's a very good motivation for learning software architecture. What about if we look at architecture from a software engineering point of view? Why do we need something like software architecture?
We can start from this complexity issue, that if you're building a simple thing, sometimes use analogy of building a doghouse. You build something that you can start building, just build it. If it goes a little bit wrong, you fix it. And that's design process or building process where you don't need that much of overall thinking. But then when you go to build something a little bit more complex, like, well, Sydney Opera House or whatever, you just can't start building it from one corner and go on from there. And that's way where you typically need something else. Kind of situations in which you're building complex things that won't go for build and fix, or you can't just first do and then think, but you have to do something else. The role of the software architecture is this thinking before you start doing it, what you are about to do, these big things. If you're building something simple, something you've done a million of times, web shop that you've already have delivered, you don't need software architecture, or you have software architecture there implicitly somewhere, you don't have to care about it. But then when you're doing something complex, new things you don't understand, then you typically have to care about software architecture.
In software engineering, so where does this complexity that we need architecture for, where does it come from?
It's not only one kind of a complexity. Of course, one thing is size. Okay, when you are doing big things, then you typically need to organize them somehow. And they might be big in different terms, sheer size of the code in terms of lines of code, or number of nodes you have in whatever means, or amount of data you need to handle or manipulate or transfer or whatever. Those are size-related things that might make your thing complex, and you have to think about, okay, how are we going to deal with that in a reasonable time? But there are also other aspects to complexity, like typical ones in software architecture design, are important quality attributes, or sometimes called non-functional requirements, like performance. If you have strict requirements for performance, or something that you need for a competitive advantage, or then you have hard constraints, like if you are trying to guide an airplane, well, there's a certain limits within which you have to actually accomplish things. So there might be other similar issues like security, or there might be limitations with respect to such qualities like physical resources. So typical mobile devices of today, they need to be very aware of how much they consume energy, and you have to build them typically to minimize the energy consumption in order to increase the battery life. So this one other thing is broad category of different quality attributes. But there are also others that might come from the application domain, such as if you are doing something for medical or military, they have very, very strict quality attributes or procedures or processes that you need to prove that your system does things properly. So this kind of a different tough domain requirements might be one way of increasing or making things more complex than just doing them. And one particular reason is typical these days is this variability, which means that in many cases when someone makes a software product, it's not just one single product, but a family of products. So you have multiple products and then you need to build your system in order to enable this variability. You can't build every single product for every market, for every different customer group or every different price group. You can't do them separately from scratch. You have to do them from one set of assets. And in that, software architecture is typically a central asset.
We have talked about software architecture, but we haven't defined it yet.
Before we actually define it, we can start from seeing the software architecture from different perspectives, because that's actually depending on the situation of a particular company or whatever way you're doing your software, it might be that different things are important. And so one way of seeing is that what you try to do with software architecture is that you try to manage the risks related to the complexity. So for example, if you have tough performance requirements, so before you start building, you try to do enough design, enough overall thinking that are we going to meet these performance requirements or how risky is that? And then you do architecture design in order to come up with some initial ideas or overall structure of the system that gives you some little bit more certainty about the risk related to that. One way of seeing software architecture is that one can say that every system has an architecture. It's defined as the highest level of abstraction of system. So that's the architecture. It may be that nobody even knows that, but in the system there is architecture. And then there's separate issue whether there is any documentation about that. But that's one way of defining architecture, to the highest level of abstraction of a system. Of course, there are also formal definitions to or standard definitions that are architecture. And one of the most used one, quite widely used one, is from IEEE standard that actually says that the architecture is the fundamental organization of the system. Basically boils down to that it defines the system components and how they relate. Sometimes architecture is called that being a component connector view of the system. So that's one way of defining the architecture from more or less this kind of a structural point of view of and then actually the definition from the standard goes on and takes also into account the environment into which that goes. It's not only the system, but how it relates to the environment and the principles you use to guide the development. So architecture is not only the structure, but how you communicate that to the developers, how to build the system so that it actually will have such a structure.
Who is interested in the architecture?
When you think of a system, there are always people to whom you build the system. And one can define that those are the stakeholders of the system. And that's where architecture design starts, that you try to understand that to whom you are building the system for. And in architecture design, you typically talk about concerns of those stakeholders, that what they have. They might have different views. Someone wants about money, someone wants speed, someone wants performance, security, and so forth. And the typical stakeholders include, of course, the system's users, how they use and how they see the system, how much they actually tolerate, for example, latency from the system responses and so forth. And then another thing is, of course, the customer who's paying for the system. And those are the typical stakeholders, but there are many others who need to consider or at least think about when you are thinking about building the system and making the architecture for it, starting from managers and project managers who might have deadlines there. And there might be, of course, developers who develop the system. For example, simple thing is that when you think of building a system, you might select some technologies. If the people who are supposed to develop the system don't know the technologies, you have to take that into account and their capabilities. So there are many things. And of course, there are legal issues, that are issues from sales and marketing. You have to make it such that things that include the systems are easy to build and so forth. So that's the idea to architecture, is to see that what are the concerns of the stakeholders, whether there are qualities or some constraints over the system, or what kind of concerns they have, and try to understand, can you meet them? So before you start building the system, you try to figure out that what are those concerns and how you can meet them. So what is the actual requirement for latency? And can we meet it with this kind of an architecture if we use some client-server architecture. Is that enough? Can we process everything that's needed in due time and so forth? In that sense, one can say that the roles of a software architecture includes first building, showing the big picture, the overall picture of the system, so that it helps you to communicate, okay, what are the main elements of the system and how they interrelate. And that's this kind of a typical standard definition of what's the overall system of or highest level of abstraction. But in addition to that, it's a very important tool for documenting the early design decisions. These are sometimes called architecturally significant design decisions. So making those decisions and communicating them, enabling the communication between the stakeholders about those decisions. So for example, if there's someone interested in that the security of the system is very important, but if it has some implications, for example, the performance, then you have to, in many cases, you have to make some trade-offs. You can't have the fully secure system and have the performance, best possible performance out of there. And now you need to make a decision about that, and actually who makes the decisions are those stakeholders. But they now have to understand that what they are making the decision about, that they have to understand that, okay, we can't have the highest level of security we have. Can we be satisfied with the lower level of security, or can we sacrifice the performance? I mean, this kind of a trade-off discussions, they are basically are making technical design decisions, but the input for those decisions comes from the stakeholders. And you have to be able to engage those stakeholders into those decision processes in order to make the system for them and not for you.
Doing the architectural design, how do you do that, and who does it?
The one view was that you make the architecturally significant design decisions. The idea is that those are the ones you made in the beginning, and you have to identify that, okay, that you make them first because they are characterized typically so that they are the ones that are difficult to fix or change if you get them wrong. If you build your systems from the wrong kind of a components, from structure, or you use some technologies that cannot scale up or whatever, it's very hard to change that underlying technology later on. So that's a typical kind of architecturally significant design decisions. They are typically also kind of decisions that are cross-cutting in the sense that they affect multiple components if you want to change them. If you want to add authentication to all components, it's going to affect all components. And it's better to decide that early on than trying to do it later, because then it's harder. You have to go through everything. And then also mentioned these system qualities. They enables that if you need high performance, you better start thinking about it early enough before you start building, because it may be that it's not fine-tuning in the one place. You have to understand where the performance comes and where you lose it. And it's good to understand it before you build the system, rather than realizing from the ready system that, okay, wow, we won't get anything out of. So those are the architectural significant design decisions.
These architecturally significant decisions sound very, very critical to me. How do you know what an architecturally significant decision is?
You know them typically if they fail. And the idea to know them is to make them before you fail. So I mean, this is kind of a chicken egg problem. And the main point in architecture design is that when architect starts his or her job, these are not given. Nobody is going to tell you, most probably, so if you think of the stakeholders. They think about one thing. They don't know about your solutions and what you're going to build and whether it's going to work out. So nobody's going to tell you which ones are the architecturally significant decisions you need to make. And that's also most probably one of the difficult parts of architecting, figuring out first what is the problem. You don't just solve a problem. You have to first figure out what is the problem, and you get the problem by talking to stakeholders. And that's where you start identifying the architectural significant design decisions that you need to make. Although the best advice for that is that is the responsibility of the architect to decide what's architecturally significant. And that's an important thing to understand, that nobody's going to tell you that you have to do that, most probably. It's your responsibility. Of course, they might tell you, but still, it's your responsibility to figure out whether it's really the important thing or not. And that's one part of the expertise of the architect, to understand that and take the responsibility of figuring out what's really needed there. And if we go this way, is there going to be a performance problem? Are we going to have a security issues if we build the system that way? And those are the things that the architect just needs to take the responsibility of.
So it sounds to me like a good architect knows what these are, but there's no clear rule. They don't shout at you, I'm an architecturally significant decision. It's something you need based upon experience, domain and system understanding to figure out yourself.
Exactly. That's correct. Yeah. So the idea is exactly the one key element is the experience. And when you think of this kind of courses, experience is very hard to teach. Experience comes from the work. What you can learn from this kind of courses is to understand the role and some methods that when you start building your experience, then you can actually utilize it into those, making those
architectures. So is this why software architects are paid so well?
That's probably, I think that's one part of it. And the other part is that there is this risk management issue that, because they are down the line there. If the system doesn't scale up, they are going to shout at the software architect first.
They somehow bridge the gap between the problem domain and the solution domain. So they have one foot close to requirements engineering and one foot very close to development and understand both.
Exactly. When you start making software, these architectural design decisions, fix something or think about, okay, we build this kind of a system, you typically induce other kind of requirements. So if you think that, okay, we are going to use mobile applications here and then or mobile devices for some things, then of course, if that wasn't on the table in the requirement earlier, now you have a requirement, how much we need processing power, memory there, how much we need the screen. So these kind of issues come up. So you are actually generating requirements while you start making a decision. So it's this kind of a two-way process.
Yeah, I think this is something we could explore a bit more because we have talked about requirements engineering, which is engaging the stakeholders. And now you say, well, the architect does that too. So is the architect part of requirements engineering or is this some different engagement with the stakeholders? So what is the relationship between architecture and requirements?
In many cases, the answer is that they are separate, which most probably is not that good. But one other way of seeing is that when you do the requirements, you list quite many requirements, which most are not architecturally significant. So they don't matter that much. You can just implement them. Architect doesn't need to be involved in collecting those and defining, refining those and understanding those decisions. Architect comes into play when you start already thinking about the system and then architect starts looking at those requirements and trying to pick up architecturally important ones. Typically, because the usual requirements process, in most cases, it concentrates on the functional requirements of the system. So what the system is supposed to do, rather than that much on, for example, performance or security. They might, if they are really important, they might come up already there. But many of them, the maintainability of the system or these kind of things, they don't come up at all in that phase. So when architects come to, architects try to figure out which of the functional requirements are architecturally significant, and which potentially other requirements that are not yet stated there are there. And that means that architects need to come into the process. At what stage they come there, it might depend. In many cases, it might be a little bit too late, so they have to redo some of the work with the stakeholders. And I think that there's no way out of that. They have to engage the stakeholders.
I think this clarifies it quite a bit. Let's look at the other interface that is downstream to the developer. So what is the interface between the architect and actual development?
The architect makes the high-level decisions of the system about the structure, how you build the system. And clearly, that is one way of instructing the developers, okay, this is how we want to build the system. So, for example, if architect says we are going to divide the system in these kind of layers, when developers start doing, they need to understand, okay, these are the layers and these are the rules for actually how you, if you build something in this layer, what things you should be able to access. Because those things, it might be that it's the same code base, they are not restricted in any other way but by the convention. And that's one way of seeing architects for the developers, is that architect actually puts some constraints on developers that how they can do their job. And that's very important for architects to understand that architects is not supposed to do the design decisions for the developers, the low-level design decisions or coding decisions, but architects should make the big decisions. Okay, these are the things we're going to do in the server, these are things we're going to do in the client, or this is how we structure the system at the higher level, and then communicate that to the developers.
This sounds like you need to be a superhuman to be a good architect. It sounds like you need to have in-depth technical knowledge. You must be good with people and understand both the problem and solution domain. So how do you learn to do all that?
It's not easy, but I think that's very good architects are kind of that, or at least they have two out of three of that set. They are technically very, very competent if they can't talk to the people, or they can go talk to people and they understand some. And of course, in many cases with the big systems, you have a team of architects working there, so you might have a little bit of different roles in that set. But that's the way, it's a very demanding job. And typically, those best programmers tend to get this kind of a position as an architect that later on in their careers, is that's not uncommon. So how grow into the role of an architect. And one part of that is also experience. So it's not that difficult when you have seen enough of the system. So it, you know, easiers your decision making when you already have a knowledge, okay, this works and it doesn't work and so forth. So you are not so starting from scratch making those big decisions.
Architecture and its place is somehow easy to understand in the waterfall model. But now, these days, we see more and more organizations turning toward agile development. Agile development has, as far as I know, fairly little to say about software architecture. So could you comment on the role of software architects and architecture in agile development?
There are a couple of ways of commenting for that one. First one is that whether you really need an architect, or whether the architecture is simple. That comes from the where we started, from the complexity. So if you are doing a very highly complex system, which you have a high risk of failing, then agility might be a very, very hard thing. But if you have a system you have done, you know how to do the system you have, or you are using technologies that basically restrict your architecture to model view control and that seems to be good for kind of applications you are building, then you don't have to basically worry about the architecture. And you can go with your agile development, and your job is more about development than architecture design. But then, of course, there are cases where you have tough architecture things and you would still like to do some development in an agile manner. And there's been different ways companies try to deal with that. Sometimes they have a separate board of architects making sure that nothing goes wrong with the architecture. They have old architecture, some kind of guidelines, and try to see that when you develop the code that you stay within the architecture. The architecture doesn't go bad at any stage. Or then you might have different sprints that you do some architecture design in the middle and try to keep the architecture good and try to concentrate a little bit more on the architecture. And then there are some approaches in which you take this, let's say, performance and you try to put it down as a requirement that you try to develop also piece by piece. Okay, that in the first sprint we try to get to this level of performance and then later on we are going to go stricter. And so it means that you also have to think about the architecture all the time. I don't believe that the architecture just emerges without somehow magically emerges when you just code well, you just come up with a good architecture. That's something I don't believe. You have to somehow put effort in that. It might be that there's a couple of persons who know so well the area that they are actually doing the good job, but they still, at least in the back of the mind, they have to be very conscious about that. Okay, they are going to come up with a good architecture.
So would I paraphrase you correctly if I say that I interpret you as saying that good architectures don't emerge by refactoring, they emerge by planning and thinking?
I think you are doing good job in rephrasing it, because you might refactor into a good architecture if it's simple enough and you either knew, you never got too much away from the good architecture. You made a good guesses or you have a good intuition from the beginning. But and in general, I don't believe it's not like starting to build a bridge without first thinking of how long the bridge will be, how you build it. So, I mean, this kind of a thinking that you have to have some, you have to get that idea somewhere. You can't rely that you do whatever you do, then you refactor it into order, of course. Or you are going to do quite a lot of refactoring if you are.
Might be very, very expensive.
Exactly, because that was the issue with the architectural significant decisions, that they are hard to fix. So if you build a total mess and it doesn't scale up, then fixing that is starting more or less from scratch, thinking about the system and doing it again. So you can refactor, but take a couple of years.
So that means, would for example mean that for architecturally significant design decisions, a late change is certainly not cheap, even in an agile process.
Yeah, exactly. And that's actually a very good point, because one thing is that it's clear that even if you want to embrace change, there are things that are harder to change than the others. You can't build a system where you can change everything cheaply. And I think that's one way of putting architectural significant design decisions, is that if they are hard to change, they were architecturally significant. If you got them right, good. If you didn't, then they are going to be hard to change, even regardless of how agile your development is.
I think that's an excellent point. So let's stop with this very important thing to keep in mind. But a final question is, I guess many students now got very interested in software architecture and understand both the role importance and the good pay you get as a software architect. So how can they learn more?
This was an introduction to them. We have a little bit more architects on software development course, and then we have a special course at Aalto for software architecture. So there's a specific course where you actually go on a little bit deeper into the methods. How do you actually make these architectural design decisions? What are the methods for that and means for validating, evaluating your decisions before you start building?
Okay, thank you very much, Professor Männistö, for your time. This was a very interesting discussion.
Thank you.